The Committee of Higher Education and Workforce Development will now be in order. Today's date is Thursday, February 19th, 2015. Today is Arts Day on the Hill, so many of us have our buttons. That's good. We stand with the arts. Just a reminder, we now are letting people know that our committee hearings may, between now and second committee deadline, go till 4 o'clock. We'll take each one as it comes, but if you could just plan on that. So today, we will begin the hearing with Senator Claussen's 352.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to introduce Senate File 352, which is a proposal to establish supplemental academic co-requisite instructional programs at MinSU campuses. Co-requisite courses are intended to minimize the use of non-credit-bearing courses for students in need of additional academic support. Co-requisite courses would be credit-bearing in lieu of enrolling in a non-credit prerequisite remedial course in reading, writing, or mathematics. And Madam Chair, I do have a delete-all A3 amendment.
Very good. So would you like to move that?
In addition, Madam Chair, if we could move that, but then I also have an oral amendment as well. Would you like to take them both?
The oral amendment first.
Okay. The oral amendment begins on line 1.16, and it is section 1, subdivision.
Senator Nelson, the A3 should be in your packet.
Yep.
Did you have it? Okay, very good. Go ahead, Senator Claussen.
Okay. Madam Chair, the oral amendment is found in Section 1, Subdivision 2, Item 3, beginning on line 1.16 and 1.17. That should be eliminated. That was an error. So we would have to then renumber Item 4 to 3 and add the word and after coursework in line 1.15.
Senator Claussen, this is an author's amendment, so it's fine. I think we'll have some discussion about that very deletion as time goes on, but it's your bill, and this is an author's amendment. So it's now incorporated into the A3 that you have before you. So all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. So the bill is now in the shape you'd like it, and go ahead. Senator
you,
Kent.
Chair.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I'm confused. I don't think I have the A3 amendment. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Claussen.
Thank you. What I would like to do is to review the major features of Senate File 352 and then turn some testimony that would be in support of the bill. So if you look at Section 1, Supplemental Academic Instruction, Subdivisions 1 and 2, there are three major provisions. The first defines co-requisite instructional courses as supplemental academic instruction for students with academic deficiencies who are enrolled in college-level coursework. The second item is an item that requires the MinSU Board to establish a co-requisite supplemental academic instruction program at each campus and provides guidelines for the establishment of such programs. But I'd like to point out that the guidelines are not prescriptive, allowing each campus to develop a program unique to their community needs. And thirdly, students are allowed to enroll in an entry-level, credit-bearing, college-level course while provided targeted support, which may include tutoring, directed study time, and other academic assistance strategies developed by the institution. In looking on to Section 1, Subdivision 3, it identifies student eligibility, and again, there are three main provisions. The MinSU Board is to establish guidelines for student eligibility for supplemental academic instruction using multiple measures of assessment versus a score obtained from a single placement exam. Secondly, following a review of eligibility, if the institution determines a student would benefit from additional academic support prior to enrolling in a co-requisite supplemental academic course, the student may be required to enroll in a non-credit adult basic education program to enhance their academic skills. And lastly, if a student does not receive a passing grade in a co-requisite course, the institution must provide individual counseling, including career and employment counseling, in addition to information on educational options. Section 1, Subdivision 4, relates to student fee structure. Students enrolled in co-requisite courses may be charged a fee for the supplemental academic instructional assistance not to exceed 50% of the cost of one credit for an undergraduate course. In Section 1, Subdivision 5 is a reporting requirement. Annual reporting metrics are identified, which will assist in evaluating the effectiveness of the co-requisite supplemental academic instructional programs. And lastly, the effective date for implementation is scheduled for the 2017-2018 academic year. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to welcome to the table Mr. Bruce Vandal, Vice President of Complete College America, who will present a PowerPoint presentation, which I believe you all have as part of your packet.
Thank you, Senator Claussen, and thank you for bringing this legislation forward. I had the privilege of being at a seminar, as did you, that Complete College America put on, and was so impressed with this approach to solving some of the challenges that our students face that I'm really pleased that you're here with us today, and really think that members will enjoy and appreciate his presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It is indeed a pleasure to be here with you today. My name is Bruce Vandal, and I come from an organization called Complete College America. Complete College America started in 2009 and is an alliance of 33 states plus the District of Columbia and the territory of the Northern Mariana Islands that was created in 2009 specifically with one singular goal, which was to work with states on dramatically increasing college completion rates. And I'm sure you are all familiar with why that is such an important issue to your state and to our country in terms of preparing people for the workforce, in terms of having a highly educated society that we can move our democracy forward with. And so we have been working very hard on not just, we could have a list of 1,000 strategies that we could focus on related to college completion, but we at CCA really believe that it's critical to identify what we call key game changer strategies, strategies that faculty or institutions have developed and have implemented at scale at their institutions and that are seeing dramatic improvements in student success, not just 2 or 3% of improvement in student success, but double-digit success. And one of those issues is indeed the issue of co-requisite remediation. Now, I know that many of you are very familiar with the challenges of this issue, and I wanted to, first of all, just illustrate for you that this is a national problem. In fact, as we look at our data, which we collect from states and that's been collected nationally from other organizations, generally speaking, about 60% of all students who are enrolled in community colleges across the country are placed into at least one remedial education course. If you were to include four-year institutions, particularly access four-year institutions, you're looking at least about one out of every two students enrolling in post-secondary education comes to college requiring some kind of remedial instruction. But even more troubling is that very few students who are placed into remedial education ever actually earn a credential. So from our data, community college students in particular, about 1 in 10 are earning a college credential within 6 years after being placed into remedial education. So indeed, what often happens with students in post-secondary education is we're actually admitting them to remediation, not to college. And very few of them ever come out on the after 4 or 6 years with a post-secondary credential. In fact, we find that in mathematics particularly, where there is the greatest challenges, about 70% of students who are placed into remedial math never complete a college-level mathematics course after 2 academic years. In many cases, the student is placed into remedial education, and they never even enroll at the institution because they sort of get the message that maybe I'm not college material after all. And of course, today we know that we need every student who desires a post-secondary education to have that opportunity. So by sending the signal right out of the gate that students are placed into remediation, often we're telling them that maybe you're not meant for this institution, which of course is the wrong message that I think anybody would agree we should be sending to students. But what's most interesting is that over the last several years, we've seen a proliferation of research on this question, trying to better understand why it is that students are not successful when they're placed into remediation. And the conventional wisdom is, well, you know, they're just not able to learn the material, and so we have to place them into more and more remedial instruction to ensure that they have the opportunity to be successful. But indeed, what we've done through our best intentions is actually create multiple hurdles for students. In fact, what ends up happening is that it's not a matter of whether or not students can pass the college-level courses in most cases, it's that we lose them along the way. So it's not uncommon for a college campus to have 2, 3, 4 remedial courses, say in mathematics, that a student must complete before even having the opportunity to enroll in, say, a college-level mathematics courses. And unfortunately, what we find is that we just simply lose them. They drop out of the system. They may pass the first course, but they don't proceed to the subsequent course and ultimately to the post-secondary credential. So at the end of the day, this is mathematics data. You can see that students who are placed as many as 3 levels below college level in remedial courses, only about 1 in 10 actually ever complete a college-level math course. And what's most interesting is that the reason for that, as you can see sort of the students on the right-hand side here, it's not that they failed the course. It's that they just never progressed through the full sequence of courses, and just time got it, or life got in the way for many of them, and they dropped out of the system. Or they just decided that they just could not persist in remedial courses, courses that they were paying for, courses that they were not receiving credit for towards a degree. It just wasn't worth it for them in the end. And so many leave the system before they even start their college credential. So this is the same is true for English. This is just some additional data on English, not quite as profound, but this is really the same issue. And so at Complete College America, we looked for solutions. We looked high and low across the country for institutions that have been able to solve this problem. And we've come to the conclusion, after looking at the research and looking at the best models in the field, that a model of support we call co-requisite instruction is really the best way to go. And so what we mean by that, as Senator Klassen mentioned in his remarks, is instead of placing students into multiple levels of remedial education that they must complete before entering a college-level course, is that we should immediately put as many students as we possibly can in college-level courses and provide them the support that they need in those courses to see to it that they're successful. Doing so eliminates all those attrition points that ultimately have to navigate before they get to the college-level courses. And we're finding that at 4-year and 2-year institutions alike that have implemented this model are seeing dramatic improvements in student success in college-level courses. So one of the things we start with in terms of a guiding objective based on the research is the notion that we should set a goal at all of our institutions that all students should be able to get through a college-level course and enter a program of study within one academic year. And the reason for that is that the research the Community College Research Center has done at Columbia University has found that students who complete their gateway courses and actually enter their program within one academic year have dramatically higher college completion rates. Students who delay their time into those courses and into their program are far less likely. So when you put remediation at the front end of it, by definition, you're automatically undermining students' opportunities to be successful in their degree program. There are many different ways to deliver remedial instruction or co-requisite instruction. I just want to go through a couple of them with you today. The very simple, straightforward approach is indeed, as I mentioned, putting students into a college-level course in a single semester and really just giving them more time on task, whether that's an additional section instructional section. So instead of meeting 3 times a week, you meet 4 times a week. Putting students in mandatory tutoring where they have to sit down one-on-one with a tutor and work through the material that they're learning in the college-level course. In some cases, we accelerate the remedial instruction in the first part of the semester and then accelerate instruction in the gateway course through the remainder part of the semester. So that the point is that they're still completing the course within one semester. And there are many different models that are showing really dramatic results. And I'm just going to show you a couple of them really briefly here. The Community College of Baltimore County has what they call the accelerated learning model that they focus on English. In their old model, they were putting students into two semesters of remedial English before they ever had the opportunity to enroll in college-level English, and they were only getting about 33% of their students through their Gateway English course. When they created a co-requisite model where they were enrolled in a remedial support class at the same time they were enrolled in the college-level class, they dramatically increased their results to 74%. So they over doubled the percentage of students who completed college-level English. Austin Peay State University did a very similar model. They had two different opportunities in mathematics where they eliminated the two prerequisite math courses in remediation and just placed students in either a quantitative reasoning or a statistics course. And as you can see in the old model, they were getting only about 10% of students through Gateway math courses. When they implemented this model, which included mandatory tutoring and lab work, they're getting success rates in these between 65 and 80% in math and about 70% in English. So this is no small reform. It's having dramatic impact. And it's mostly because we've redesigned the system. We've eliminated those attrition points for students. So by putting them right in the college-level course, they have every opportunity to be successful in that course. Another model that you might hear of is a stretch model that you could extend over two semesters. This indeed still accomplishes our objective of getting students through a Gateway course within one academic year. But for students that maybe need more time or are looking to take on different pathways, whether that be a STEM pathway or other types of more rigorous pathways, giving them more time, but doing so over two semesters, integrating the Gateway material, the college-level material, with the academic support over 2 years can actually result in dramatic improvements. So one example of that is what we call the QuantWay or StatWay model out of the Carnegie Foundation, and they've implemented this model, and immediately when they had institutions implement StatWay in this case, they saw improvements in Gateway success from about 6% to over 50% immediately after implementation. And so it's really hard to argue with these kinds of results. They're successful at two-year institutions. They're successful at four-year institutions. What's most exciting is that the message is getting out there across the country, and so excited to see that Minnesota is having this conversation, because you have an opportunity to be on the forefront with many other states that have decided that co-requisite remediation is the model that should be the predominant way we support students who need additional academic support in college-level courses. So West Virginia's Community and Technical College System just this past fall has scaled the implementation of co-requisite remediation for all students at all of their campuses. The Tennessee Board of Regents, so their community colleges and their access four-year institutions, are now providing co-requisite support on all of their campuses, or they'll be fully scaling it this coming fall. Connecticut, you may have known, has passed legislation that has done this. Colorado has similar legislation, as well as system-level policy at their community colleges that are offering this type of support. And Indiana has also went statewide at their community colleges with co-requisite support. Other states are following close behind. And so there's no question that this is a trend across the country. And what kind of results are we seeing at scale? It's one thing to say that it's working in individual institutions. It's another to say that it's actually happening statewide, which is, of course, the conversation that you're having here in Minnesota. So this is just newest data. I just received this a couple of days ago from Indiana. And you can see that in the old models in math and English and reading, they were getting somewhere between 30 and 40% of students that were completing Gateway courses in the old model in 3 years. This is the data over 3 years tracking that kind of an outcome. After implementing a co-requisite strategy in math and English and reading, they're seeing success rates of between 55 and 65% in one semester after implementing this approach at Ivy Tech Community College, which is the statewide community college in the state of Indiana. So there's no question that this can not only happen at individual institutions, but it can happen at scale across the state. And then I just have one last statement to make that I think is really important for you in Minnesota. Because of the work that you've already done here at the state legislature in terms of implementing the ACT battery of tests in high school, which provides opportunities for students to be assessed while in high school, to determine whether or not they're on track, and hopefully lead to interventions while students are in high school, I think with that model that you've already developed and with a co-requisite strategy, you have a unique opportunity that is achievable. That is, to be able to have a future where no high school graduate is placed into standalone remedial courses. Either they enter college ready, and if not optimally ready, you put them into a co-requisite opportunity, and indeed we end a traditional standalone remediation for high school graduates as we know it. And you, I think, have that opportunity here in Minnesota. So I'm very pleased to be here. I'm very excited that you're having this conversation, and I'm going to be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions for Mr. Vandal. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Chair. My question is, and you probably covered it, I might have missed it, but what's the average time a student remains in remediation and courses before they actually get credit for the time they're
spending
remediation?
Mr.
Vandal. Madam Chair and Senator, it obviously depends on when students enter and how many courses that they're required to be placed into. And so we have situations in states where, and where you might have three or four different courses that a student would take, that they would have to take. So I don't know exactly the average amount of time students spend in remediation. I can tell you that there's a very low percentage of students that even complete the remediation within 2 years. It's in the neighborhood of about, maybe 50% are completing their remediation within 2 years.
But Senator Franz, are you talking about without the co-requisite model? Yeah, because in the co-requisite model, they aren't in remediation. Yeah, gotcha. Thanks. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Vandal, this is a very intriguing presentation and report, and I've followed the Complete College America work. I'm part of the Governor's Workforce Development Council, and this is one of the issues that we looked at. And I noticed right away on page 2, too many students start college in remediation, 60%. Mm-hmm. We're right about there in Minnesota. In fact, our committee just last week saw the staggering and stunning graph that showed that only 39% of Minnesota students who take the ACT are college ready. So it is a significant issue, and I think it's one that we need to look at both in the K-12 system and in the higher education system. We should not have only less than 40% of our kids ready for college when they graduate. But I wanted to ask you a question about the, I think you called it the Stayway.
Statway.
Statway. I'd like to know what that is. Mm-hmm. What is that exactly?
Sure. It's
pretty
Mr.
impressive
Vandal.
Numbers there.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson. So one of the other issues that's emerging in the remediation reform movement is this notion that we need to develop multiple pathways for students in mathematics. In other words, in many states or in many institutions, the default pathway is that students must be ready for and complete college algebra in order to be considered sort of a college student. And we're finding now, particularly when we're talking about workforce and also as we look at what math skills are essential for the different majors that a student might take, it's important to think about what those essential skills are and ensure that students are learning those skills and they're not taking mathematics that may not be absolutely relevant to their program of study. So what the Carnegie Foundation has done, as well as the Dana Center at the University of Texas, is they've talked about developing alternatives to college algebra that are still rigorous math pathways but are more aligned with whatever program of study a student is pursuing. So for a social sciences degree, for example, a Statway model or statistics course might be more appropriate than, say, college algebra. And so we're seeing many colleges that are differentiating the math requirements based on academic programs. And then for those students who are not optimally prepared, like the Statway model, they're providing the exact support students need to be successful in college-level statistics, as opposed to preparing them for college algebra. Unfortunately, what often happens in remediation is that we're all preparing students for college algebra. And so that's where some students get tripped up because they don't see the relevance of the instruction towards their program. So instead, by differentiating the support we provide, we make sure that they're successful in the math they really need.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on page 7 then, when we're looking at the results between the traditional model and the co-requisite model, it really stood out to me, particularly the two math courses, because that is such a sequential subject that you really have to know the prerequisites in math before you can move on to the next steps. And so in this, in tabulating these results here then, was this comparing the exact same courses or was it comparing success in the Statway, which could have been an alternative course. So what I'm really trying to get at here is, are we comparing apples to apples here? Are we comparing the very same math course here, whether it was a co-requisite or a traditional model?
Mr. Vandal.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, that's a very good question. And indeed, the old model, if you look at the, if you're looking at the Carnegie data, what they're telling you is that about five or six percent of students were passing a gateway math course within a year, academic year. And then in the StatWay model, that is a very specific course, a statistics course, they were getting results of around 60% that were in there. So but the key, I think, lesson learned from that is that they've discovered that a large percentage of students do not need college algebra, so we are designing the instruction to meet their instructional needs, and so they saw those results. So indeed, you're right, there are students in that 6% that were pursuing remediation and support for college algebra, largely speaking, in some cases statistics and otherwise. So there is a difference. There is, that's a good point, and it's relevant. But I think the point is that nationally, that is the trend right now, is to create differentiated pathways in mathematics. That's happening in about 20 different states across the country right now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Vandal, I understand that from what you said before, but actually what I'm looking at is on page 7.
Okay.
And I want to know if comparing the traditional model in quantitative reasoning where there was an 11% rate,
right,
and then the core requisite model is 78%. I'm trying to distill if that core requisite model is the very same thing as the quantitative reasoning that was measured in the traditional model at 11%, or is that the alternative course as in the StatWay model?
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, actually at Austin Peay State University, those were standing courses that they already had. So they used to have two pathways, quantitative reasoning and statistics, that had two remedial courses that preceded them. And so that data that you're looking at was indeed 11% of students were passing quantitative reasoning in the old model, and then when they shifted to the new model, 78% were completing quantitative reasoning in the new model. So indeed, it's not apples to apples. It is indeed apples to apples,
yes,
in that particular example.
Yes. Thank you. That's what I was trying
Thank
to
you,
drill
Senator
down
no.
to.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you for sticking with it, because I had actually assumed it was other than that. I thought it was what the other method. So it is interesting that it was the same.
Yes.
Other questions? Senator Klassen, first of all, I understand we went to a different conference together, not the Complete College America, so I just want to say that for the record. But I do thank you for bringing this forward, because I'm very interested in it. I was interested, Senator Klassen, in why in the bill you thought it was valuable or important to have the student pay a fee for the supplemental part of it, or versus, you know, when we get a fiscal note, assuming that there'd be an extra cost that the MINSQ system would bear.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wanted to make this program as much as possible self-supporting. And I think it is also important that the student has a commitment. The student has made a financial commitment, which I think is important for the success of that program. So they have some skin in the game, so to speak, so they can realize that this is important. It's not free, and so they're having to commit financially.
Senator Klassen, it looks like the people around the table agree with you. I see nods. One of the concerns I have, and I'll be interested in what the students say, because I know you have a lot of student testifiers, so one of the concerns I have is that oftentimes those who need the remediation are those that may not have the necessary means, and so I just am concerned about putting up another barrier. But let's see what the students have to say. Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, well, before we leave that exact point, I wondered about that as well. And I have to say, I do believe a skin in the game is important, so I support that. But I also am quite troubled, as I've said, that only 39% of our kids are leaving high school ready for college. And so I'm considering maybe 50% should be paid for by the students and 50% by the K-12 system that sent them out unprepared. So I know that is very bold proposal, but the fact of the matter is we do have issues in K-12 that are just not being addressed. And so if we're talking about skin in the game, perhaps we should reduce that student skin in the game by 50% and somehow get the other 50% from the K-12 system.
Well, Senator Nelson, I'm sure Senator Klassen has a comment, too. We did have a bill before this committee last year where we were doing, it was a shared burden between MNSCU and the K-12 system. We heard it for informational purposes. We did not move the bill, but I'm sure the students will have more to say about that, too. But another approach would be a third, a third, a third. So
yes, so I think there's more to do there
yes.
than just the students.
Yeah. Senator Klassen, comments?
Well, my second bill I'll be presenting, I've got some ACT data, and you'll see that Minnesota's leading the other states as far as college readiness. So there are a lot of factors that go into this issue about college readiness, and I guess I wouldn't be prepared to say that it's all secondary education or higher education or the state's responsibility. So it's something to discuss, and I'm certainly open to having that discussion.
Thank you. So, thank you very much, Mr. Vandal. We appreciate your presentation. Oh, Senator Sharon, before I move to the students.
This may be completely off, but why, if this is a program that really works in terms of, I guess you're connecting it with an with accredited course, they're taking them at the same time. So perhaps it's not possible to turn the senior year of high school into a program that really is doing what you're talking about instead of having their senior year in high school have students disengaging and not involved. And if they really want to go to college and they discover early enough that they aren't meeting the correct requirements to get in, why aren't we doing this at the high school level?
Mr. Vandal?
Madam Chair and Senator, actually, that's actually not a bad idea. I mean, if indeed, if a student is in a position where they could, through dual enrollment, or enroll in a college-level course and receive that support, that's something that you might want to consider. In fact, there are many states that are doing a lot right now to be able to connect what's happening at the college level and the high school level. Tennessee, for example, has a program called the SAILS program, which allows students essentially, while they're still in high school, to go through the support that they need to be college ready using the community college curriculum. And indeed, if they get through that the college readiness material, they can actually proceed on to college level work while still in high school. So there are examples of that across the country.
And Madam Chair, just 2 points. The E-12 committee will be hearing a bill I have in concurrent enrollment. And one of the things in concurrent enrollment, there's an entry point program. And these are for 10th and 11th grade students to prepare them to be college ready by the time they get to 12th grade and are taking that ACT exam. So there is a program where they can be earning college credit and still preparing themselves for entry into college. And the second piece on that is that we have moved to the ACT suite of tests. And so as an 8th grader, as a 10th grader, student taking those exams gets a college readiness score. And I'll share a document with you in the next bill that will kind of explain that. But it gives educators a great indicator if that student is going to be successful in college. Are they on track to be successful in college? So as an 8th grader, we'll know that, and now we can start doing some remediation in our secondary schools to make sure that the student is college ready.
Senator Sharon.
Just to help me understand, because I get mixed up by what's happening in K-12 education, is this proposal that you have where there is high school students taking college courses while still in high school, are there restrictions on who can take those courses based on their performance in school?
Senator
Klassen. If so, then I don't know if that completely resolves what we might want to accomplish with moving more students who aren't college ready through college.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, back in mid 2000s, I was on the committee at the University of Minnesota for College and the Schools. And that time, we had discussions that we did have. In other words, the top 15% of the students in a class could enroll in this course, or maybe the top 10%. So it was by course identification. That's why we came up with the entry point program that opened it up to more of the middle group of students. And those students, the program intention was to prepare those students so when they got to 11th and 12th grade, they were in a position they could take college credit courses through concurrent enrollment. So it was a program to try to increase the skills of students so that they would be college ready. So we got two different things going on.
Thank you. Very good. So we'll go to your other testifiers. Thank you so much, Mr. Vandell.
Thank you.
I should state that Mr. Vandell is a Minnesota native, and he attended Apple Valley High School when I was an assistant principal there.
Oh, isn't that nice?
They both look awfully young, too.
So
I have a hunch that he was very, he may have been there at the same time Senator Dibble was there, so we'll have to check that out. We have two people we'd like to call forward, Latasha Gandy and Jamesia Jackson, two students, former students.
And we're going to turn off that for you so you don't have that light in your eyes.
Thank you. My computer was doing a good job of blocking.
Oh, you did. That's excellent. Ms. Gandy.
Madam Chair Bonoff and committee members, thank you so much for having us here today. My name is Latasha Gandy, and I am the Minnesota Managing Director for Students for Education Reform. Today, I brought one of our student leaders here today, Jamesia Jackson, who is going to discuss our support for Senate File 352.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair Bonoff and members of the committee. My name is Jamesia Jackson. I currently attend Inver Hills Community College. However, my story starts with my entrance into St. Paul Community College. There, I was required to take the ACCUPLACER, the exam that would determine my entrance level. Unfortunately, my results indicated remedial course placement. Because of these results, I soon began to question my college readiness. This doubt quickly placed a heavy emotional burden on my will to succeed. Despite this unfortunate setback, I signed up for the required remedial courses. Yet again, I was faced with another setback. This time, it was financial. Because I come from a low-income background, I was able to sign up for financial aid. I was given a Pell Grant, but after paying for the three required remedial classes, I was shocked at how little of the grant remained. Because so much of my Pell Grant was wasted on these classes, I was unable to get all the necessary materials to succeed in my courses. These costs put a hold on my start to college because we are only granted a limited amount of financial aid. The current system is not designed to support all students. It allows those in need of remediation to slip through the cracks. It is structured with the assumption that every student entering college is on track. However, this system is sadly mistaken. It does not allow for all students to be supported and therefore successful in higher education. This system is broken. Even today, at Inver Hills, I am still taking a remedial course. I have now paid for more than six courses that cover materials I should have learned in high school, and they do not count towards my graduation. Most of these I have paid for out of pocket. This financial burden becomes even heavier when the money being used for these courses should be going towards my family of five's financial stability. I also fear that my younger brother will be faced with the same unfortunate reality as he enters college this fall. This will add even more financial stress on my family as well as the emotional strain it will have on his performance. In high school, we are told that we are given the proper classes to get us college ready. Yet somehow many of us are quickly forced to face the harsh reality of a high school diploma's inadequacy. As I left high school, I felt college ready, but I soon discovered differently. Due to my ill preparation for college, remedial courses have placed both a financial and an emotional toll on my college experience. While I have been able to overcome these challenges, I know many others who have not. Therefore, we need to address the status quo. We need co-requisite courses to help alleviate the burden remedial courses place on our students. We need a solution now. We need to support all students in their path through college in a way that neither wastes time nor money, and I believe co-registry courses would do just that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Questions for Ms. Jackson? I have a couple questions. Oh, you do too? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Senator Sharon.
I just want to say, way to go, Ms. Jackson. Thanks for hanging in there. That's fabulous. I'm very impressed with your endurance and your persistence. Those are fabulous characteristics that will do more for you than a lot of the courses that you're taking.
Very good, Senator Sharon. Ms. Jackson, so in the bill, there's a couple things I just want to ask you about. One, you probably heard the conversation around if you were able to be in a co-requisite course and you had to pay extra for your tutoring, your academic support, but at least you were in a course that you were getting credit. What's your sense about that?
Madam Chair? Personally, I feel like I didn't need as much remediation as was given. So I feel like if I was to, were able to do the co-requisite courses, I at least feel like I was on track. Mm-hmm. Like I was actually going somewhere and not at a standstill.
So you wouldn't be opposed to paying an additional fee for that?
Madam Chair, no.
Thank you very much. And then Senator Claussen, what's your safeguard that in this situation, that the given that the bill allows for the institution or higher ed institution to say they think, and let's say Ms. Jackson wasn't ready for her co-requisite course, they do have the ability to say, although it would be free, that they could would do a semester of the remediation prior to going into a co-requisite. What is your thinking about that, and do you think there should be any anything to prevent overuse of that?
No. Yes, Madam Chair. We know that there are some students that may not be ready for a co-requisite course, that their skills, they might have been away from educational setting for maybe a dozen years. And so what we're saying, based upon those placement tests that you're given, you might refer that student to adult basic education program, which will at no cost to the student, but they could spend time and get their skills up to par and then enroll in the co-requisite course.
So Ms. Jackson and Ms. Gandy, I just want to make sure you understand that the way the bill's written, you could be directed that way, but it says for only one quarter or only one semester, and then you would be eligible to be in a co-requisite course. Does that seem as though that's fair?
Yes, it does, Madam Chair. We have, Madam Chair, if you mind speaking, we've actually discussed this with our students, and it was one of the contentions that we were really depending on. We acknowledge that some students are more behind than others, and to throw a student into a co-requisite course that is substantially behind is basically a sink or swim move and not fair to them as well. So there should
Great.
Be an option.
Good. Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Oh, just a comment regarding the skills that are needed. And then, as you said, they might not be there as they're thrown into that sink or swim situation. I think until we get to individualized learning curriculum where a student needing remedial strategies can actually get that very specific education that's needed, those very specific skills, at their own path, in their own place, and in their own time, I think, you know, that is the best way to really scale up needed skills and close remediation gaps. And my hope is that as this bill progresses, that we'll look at how to encourage that technology that allows for that individualized learning curriculum, which really has shown highly successful in closing skills gaps and in getting students because they can pinpoint exactly what is the missing strategy or the missing piece of information. And I think we would be remiss if we did not somehow include that in this type of legislation, because this is really what's going to help close that achievement gap and would be highly successful in the co-requisite type model.
Senator
Madam Clausen, Chair, yeah. Just a response, and Senator Nelson, many of the ABE programs are the individual learning, so you know that.
Yes, they are. And so I'd be glad to work with you, Senator Clausen, if there's a way to encourage that in this legislation.
Very good. Thank you very much, both of you. Great job.
Thank you.
Senator Clausen, you have further testifiers?
Yes, I see on Brian Lindsay and Kevin Lindstrom. If we could have folks come forward. And
Mr. Lindsley.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Brian Lindsley, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minneapolis-St. Paul Regional Workforce Innovation Network, or MSPWIN. We are a philanthropic collaborative representing 13 regional, statewide, and national funders that make investments in workforce development. We seek a prosperous and equitable Minnesota where businesses have the skilled workers they need to compete, and all adults have the opportunity to participate in the workforce and advance toward family-sustaining wages. I'm here today to speak in favor of Senate File 352 for three reasons. First, expansion of co-requisite remediation makes sense. As the Complete College America presentation and student presentation has shown, it is one approach that has shown promise in dramatically increasing student success in other states, and it should be widely available in Minnesota. Second, this is a workforce development bill. Although the bill focuses on higher education, many adults in workforce development programs get stuck in remediation. MSPWIN supports the expansion of career pathway investments, such as the Governor's Pathways to Prosperity proposal. Career pathway programs help workers consistently increase skills and wages over time by connecting training options along guided pathways that meet employer needs. One particularly challenging barrier on these pathways to good jobs is remediation. For career pathways to work optimally, we must change remediation from a barrier to a helpful support. This bill begins to do that. Third, this bill improves post-secondary performance reporting for student success. As Complete College America stated earlier, nationally, nearly 4 out of 10 students taking remedial courses at community colleges do not finish preparatory coursework, and fewer than 1 in 10 remedial students graduate. How many remedial students graduate in Minnesota? We don't know exactly. As a first step to better understanding what students need to succeed, Minnesota needs improved and transparent reporting on remediation outcomes. This bill provides the opportunity to better report on co-requisite remediation outcomes. I would like to suggest that this bill also report on the outcomes for traditional remediation. Most importantly, reporting on success in all kinds of remediation, both traditional and co-requisite, will allow comparison of what works best and drive improvement over time. Thank you. I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lindsley. Any questions for Mr. Lindsley? Thank you. Thanks for your sponsorship of the Higher Ed Summit as well. I believe Kevin Lindstrom and Greg Wright.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Kevin Lindstrom. I'm the president of the Minnesota State College faculty. We represent the 5,000 or so faculty at the two-year institutions in MinSCU. And when we hear about academic initiatives like the one you're considering today, we always think about the spectrum of students that we serve. We are open enrollment institutions, and you might think of this table as the spectrum of students that we serve. At one end, you have the least prepared, least likely to succeed student. At the other end, you have the most prepared, most likely to succeed student. And we're always wondering about academic initiatives, how they hit that spectrum. Do they hit it disproportionately? Do they serve some better than others? And the question we always ask ourselves is, who might get left behind? So as you consider this initiative or any others, we ask you to consider that core question. Does this initiative hit that higher end of the spectrum disproportionately and actually disadvantage some of those at the lower end of the spectrum? or does it really serve across the spectrum? It's a core issue for us, and we hope it's a core issue for you. As you consider the data, I can encourage you to take a close look at that, too, and think about participation rates. Again, are you seeing greater participation at the end of the spectrum that was most likely to succeed anyway, and less participation at the end of the spectrum where there were the greater challenges as a function of this new model, or are you really getting greater participation across the spectrum? Rather, though, than just express concerns, I would like to offer some suggestions for moving forward. First of all, I encourage you to clearly define the issue at hand. I've heard some express this as a cost and debt concern issue, and those concerns are very, very real, and we share those concerns for our students. I'm not sure that compromising the curriculum, however, is the way to address cost and debt concerns. Secondly, I would encourage you, before offering ABE up as a solution to anything, to study closely its effectiveness or lack thereof in our institutions. We know there is compelling data out there. I refer you to a study by John Osmussen to get that data. Third, I encourage you to consider learning communities. Our faculty that I talk to, who teach on our campuses in learning communities, can't say enough good things about learning communities. I encourage you to consider that as a possibility here. And finally, I ask that you engage our faculty who do this work every day in this discussion. Many of them have devoted their entire careers to working in this realm. They believe in the students that they serve. Every day they work to improve, modify, change, do better with what they do in the classroom. They've been doing that for years and years and years. Yet it's my understanding they weren't included in this conversation at all. Thank you for your time.
Well, Mr. Lindstrom, this is the first time we've had the conversation, so they, through you, are included, and we'll make sure to have those conversations with them. Thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Gregory Wright. I'm a counselor at Rochester Community and Technical College and also a secretary with Minnesota State College faculty. I'm here just to talk about one community college, Rochester Community and Technical College, and tell you that we have a considerable investment in supplemental instruction. We have devoted full-time faculty members, faculty lab assistants, as well as employing students who have mastered subjects. This supplemental instruction is available to students Monday through Friday from 8 to 4 o'clock during the day, and additional hours in several days during the evening. On an average day, 113 students get help in writing, math, computer, speech, language, and other subjects. 43 students a day get help in sciences courses. Each student spends about an average of 90 minutes in the Comprehensive Learning Center receiving this instruction, which is free to the students. Last year, 2,710 students spent time with this in supplemental instruction and made 20,649 visits. That's about 19% of our student population. In addition to that, our faculty is continually changing and looking at new opportunities and taking a look at the studies that are out there. And we are piloting the supplemental instruction in our English courses right now. But I must say that we're also searching for what is the minimum level of knowledge that we can start a student at and still be able to get them through those kinds of courses with a supplemental instruction. In addition, next year we will be piloting the Statway courses for statistics. And normally a statistics is a one-semester course, but with Statway, where we will start those students, it will become a two-semester course. And then, unfortunately, we don't have the information yet on how successful that's going to be yet, because that will be starting next year. So with that, I'd like you to know that we certainly are experimenting with lots of different studies, working with as many students, and also trying to deal with the challenges that come to us that students bring with them that are no fault of their own. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple comments more than anything. Senator Claussen, I would encourage you, and I'm certain that you're willing to do so, to work together with these folks. It sounds like, Madam Chair and Senator Claussen, that there are some pilots going on already, and we could work together with them to get some data and how that's working. And the other thing it sounds like is a lot of these counseling services might already be available on campuses, so that might take care of the fee altogether. If there are certain services being offered on our different campuses, maybe we can try to work together with them and incorporate that, and perhaps there isn't a fee at all if we can work through this. And certainly want to work together with our faculty, both at the two-year and four-year institutions, and do whatever we can to make this work. Because, again, we want to do what's best for the student, and that's what it all comes down to.
Thank you. Senator Ortman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I find this to be so troubling that we have so many students that aren't ready through no fault of their own. And what a terrible burden. I mean, just listening to Ms. Jackson, what a powerful story. How is she able to overcome that obstacle that she didn't create? It's a real testament to her and to her family. I'd like to know from Mr. President Lindstrom, to what do you attribute this, and do you think it's a growing problem?
Mr. Lindstrom.
Madam Chair, Senator, I don't believe it can be attributed to any one thing. So often we see the result when it comes to our doorstep, and we share many of the concerns the students have. In fact, I think we share most of those concerns about debt and burden and opportunities for success. Is it a growing issue? I don't know that I could say that it is or isn't. I don't know that I have the perspective to offer that response.
Madam Chair. President Lindstrom, what I'm getting at is I heard testimony that there are students that have been out of the educational system for a long time, and they haven't been refreshed in their skills or their learning. But do you also think that, at least in part, this is attributable to the public schools and the curriculum?
Madam Chair, Senator.
Mr. Lindstrom.
We see students in so many different places in life. And as you mentioned, you have the student who's been out 10, 15 years. And when you hear talk about ACT scores, those things are fairly irrelevant for them. So we see those folks in a different light than the students who just came out of high school. Those students who are just coming out of high school have a variety of life circumstances. As a counselor in the two-year colleges, I see that every day in my office. I don't think it's fair to attribute to any one thing the cause or make the cause any one thing that leads to student challenges.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I agree that it shouldn't be attributed to one thing. I'm looking for what is the range of things. And you've cited at least one study. Maybe you can just say the name of that study, and I can go, you know, look myself and see what I can find on the subject. I just would like to know more about why so many of Minnesota's students are at our colleges unprepared to take college courses. I'd like to know more. So can you just maybe name the study that you referred to?
Madam Chair, Senator, the study I referred to was about ABE, and specifically ABE as a solution in this realm, and I would just encourage everybody to study it. John Osmussen, former auditor for the Minsky system, who's now gotten into developmental education nationally, did a study for, I believe it was, six metro community colleges, where he looked at this developmental realm and specifically studied the effectiveness or lack thereof of students referred to ABE and whether or not they ever returned to one of our institutions.
And Mr. Lindstrom, if I might add to that, and I know Senator Nelson has a question too, you mentioned that study to me, but we also do share the low statistics that are occurring nationally is when our students do go into remediation, the percent who actually then go on and finish their degree is unfortunately very low. And so I just want to frame this discussion around that problem, and that that Senator Claussen's putting forward a bill because there's something happening around the nation. They're trying something new. And the something new says that if we can put them in a credit-bearing class at the same time, they won't get as discouraged. And so I can understand that there may be some concern that those students aren't ready, and that's why Senator Claussen did add that flexibility in his bill so that you could say, as an institution, nope, you're still going to have to go to straight remediation first, and there may be a cost to you for that, and so perhaps we as a state need to help you with that, because if we believe in this, we need to help you with the resources. But I think it shows promise, and I would hate to have us start small and say, oh, we'll try it at this place or that place, when other states are actually doing this now and they're seeing dramatic results. So, and it's your faculty who are the ones who are going to be the experts on the ground, so we want your partnership.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Wright, thank you so much for coming to committee and talking about the success that we've seen at RCTC. And I know that you particularly serve a large number of students who do enter RCTC and are not prepared for college work. And so this is a highly successful program. And my question is, how are we doing that at RCTC? In other words, how is that being funded? And, you know, could this be a model that would be helpful statewide? So if the students are not needing to pay for that, that individual supplemental instruction, how are we doing that?
Well, I'm not an expert on funding, but I know that it comes out of the general budget of the college. And it has to be supported by tuition dollars, just like everything else has to be supported by tuition dollars. Mm-hmm. As far as the exact funding model, I don't know. In the courses that we talked about earlier, the ones that we're experimenting with in college-level English, that is one of the extended courses that was talked about earlier. College-level English is normally a 4-credit course, but with the supplemental instruction intensive goes with it, it's a 5-credit course, and that's part of the way that we're funding that. And then, of course, in the Statway course, it becomes a 2-semester course rather than a 1-semester course, so that they are paying a little bit more, but then they probably won't have to have 2 semesters of remediation for it.
So,
Senator Nelson,
thank you.
And we still do have 2 testifiers and another bill, too.
So. Thank you, and Madam Chair. And so, in a sense, one could say that RCTC is doing this core requisite just in a different manner than perhaps what is, or well, I can't tell how this is exactly described in the bill, but one, in a sense, RCTC is doing the core requisite model in that students are getting the remedial skills that they need at the same time they're taking other coursework. Is that correct?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Wright.
Senator, yes.
Thank you. Yep, very good. Thank you very much. You have your other 2 testifiers. Senator Claussen?
Yes, I'd just like to make a few comments about some of the comments that have been made. Statistics show that remediation is going down in Minnesota. And I think, too, you have to look at the students. At the University of Minnesota, remediation is 5%. But when you get to the 2-year colleges is where we're seeing a high percentage of the students. I think it's important to note, too, that's where the achievement gap shows up at the other end. High numbers of minority students that are in these programs of remediation. A third item is that there's always been some discussion, concern about the ACCUPLACER. The ACCUPLACER is aligned to the SAT exam, which very few students take here in Minnesota. Our standards are not aligned exactly to the ACT, so we've got a number of issues going on about what do we teach? Do you teach to the ACT standards, which now all of our students were taking, or do you teach to the Minnesota standards on the MCAs? What exactly are the expectations for education? So those are some things that I think need to be pointed out. I know that years ago when this first came out, when we were starting to track students, how many of our students were in remediation, I was very concerned as a high school principal. So I took our list of students and I pulled the transcripts of every one of those. I only found one student that was attending a 4-year college that was in a remediation program. And I also looked at what were their math scores on standardized tests, what was their last level of math. These are students that didn't do well in high school. They were in low-level math classes. If you look at the standard test scores, they didn't do well in math. So, you know, some of this is what happens in life. But there are some things, I think we've heard some positive things. There are some pilots going on. I'm aware of that. We just need to expand those, I think.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Senators. My name is Paku Yang, and I am System Director of P20 and College Readiness at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. We have appreciated Senator Claussen discussing this bill with us, and I appreciate this opportunity to provide comments on Senate File 352 today. We acknowledge the spirit of this bill and Senator Claussen's goals of supporting student success in higher education. Nationally, there is a movement to improve how higher education supports students in developmental education. In Minnesota and in MinSCU, we are equally committed to ensuring that our students needing remediation get the support they need in efficient and effective ways to meet their academic transfer or graduation goals. At MinSCU, we encourage a variety of evidence-based approaches to be used, and our institutions develop programs based on their local needs. Many of our MinSCU institutions are utilizing various models and programs to limit time to degree and lessen the financial impact for students needing developmental education. Some examples of these models include accelerated approaches, contextualized learning, modularized instruction, early assessments, and using multiple measures. We have a couple of institutions that are currently using the supplemental academic instruction model, and you heard from RCTC, along with other models and programs. And their data thus far have illustrated promising results for students. Overall, we support the ability to implement multiple research-based models that have shown promising results by institutions based on local needs. In addition, we are reviewing the amendment to this bill for the first time this afternoon and would like the opportunity to review it further. However, our initial response after reviewing the amendment is that we still want to say that we support the ability to use multiple approaches, multiple research-based approaches to support our students in developmental education. Thank you.
Ms. Yang, question? So the bill providing for both non-co-requisite and co-requisite, mm-hmm. the way as drafted, is that multiple approaches? Does that satisfy multiple approaches?
As the presentation by Complete College America showed, that the word co-requisite means a lot of different things to different people, and Bruce Vandell showed multiple approaches to that. We would encourage our ability is to provide multiple approaches that, and I believe that there's language in the bill that does allow for that.
Good.
But the term supplemental academic instruction in higher education means a very specific program. And so I think a bit of it is just verbiage and that the ability is that many institutions are doing many different things that allows us to serve developmental education students.
Thank you, Ms. Yang. And I think we're going to want to pass the bill out of policy so that the amendment can be engrossed and a new fiscal note can go on it. So it will then be back in finance. And so I'm sure you could work with mm-hmm. Senator Claussen if there's recommended language changes to give you that flexibility.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Oh. I'm Jessica Espinosa, and I work with Paku Yang at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities as a coordinator of college transition, so we do this work together, so just hear if there was any additional questions.
Senator Sharon, did you have a question? I couldn't tell.
Well, I have questions, and then they go away, and then I have another question. So let me just ask the one that's current on my mind. My concern, of course, is that when we talk about multiple models, mm-hmm. that now we have a hodgepodge of models trying to address a problem without us really having a system in place where we do a comparative analysis of which of those models really affects the outcome we want. And so I'm concerned about multiple models and exactly what that means. I'll pay attention to that more closely. I would prefer to see us have a study that if we do alternative models, that it really gives us as legislators an understanding of what not just to allow for academic freedoms in terms of identifying and designing a program, but we're concerned about that those implementations of programs actually affect a positive outcome. And so when I hear you're talking, that's what's created in my mind is a concern of a hodgepodge of initiatives, everybody with the best interests in mind of assisting these students who are having difficulty but losing track, that the priority is here, it is to have one that in place, even if it's one, that has good outcomes, rather than many that we have to study to make sure have positive outcomes.
Ms.
So that's a comment more than a question.
May I respond, Madam Chair,
Ms. Yang,
Senator?
Yes, please.
What I would say is that there is no silver bullet. And if there was, I think that all the post-secondary institutions across the nation would be using that one silver bullet. Even within the presentation that was provided by Complete College America and by some of the examples that I showed you, that institutions across the nation are using various approaches. I think what we would require of all of our institutions is that within a single institution that is using maybe three different models, that they are assessing those models and making sure that they have good data that illustrates that it is impacting students in a positive way. I agree that if you implemented one model across all of the institutions, it allows you to assess that one model across multiple institutions. At the same time, we would like the ability to not only be limited to that one model, but to be able to use multiple models. For example, at one of our institutions, we do learning communities plus the supplemental instruction plus accelerated programs, all three of them together. And it's hard to say one single model made the difference, but we're hoping that the three of them together is what makes the difference for the students.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, I can't tell you how much I appreciate what you just said, Senator Sharon. This is a problem that was brought to our attention. It was brought to my attention several years ago, and Students for Education Reform has been working so hard to bring this to our attention. Menscu knows about this. Everybody knows about the fact that there is a large number of low-income students of color that are entering college without proper skills and preparation. They have to take 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, up to 10 classes in order to get to the level that they need to be. We've been talking about this for years. So for me to hear now, you know, after all of these years, after the organization that has been working so hard to really bring this to our attention and say, these individuals are paying a lot of money and many of them are dropping out of college just because they cannot afford to continue. It's very discouraging to come and pay for remedial courses that are not going to be, you know, are not credits. So as much as I appreciate, you know, the kind words from Menscu to say, you know, we have different approaches and, you know, very definitely you're learning communities, supplemental instruction, and all of this and all that you've gone for years using, and they may be effective or not. The fact of the matter is that there are many students of color that are predominantly low income that you have not paid attention to for a number of years, and they continue to come to us to say enough. So I am very appreciative of Senator's bill, Senator Clausen's effort, and I really hope, Senator Clausen, that you can take us through the finish line this time. I tried, but I have not been able to, so I am just ready to help you in every way I can because we've heard this before, and I think it's time for us to act.
Thank you, Senator.
And Senator Torres-Ray, did you want to?
I do have an amendment,
go
but
ahead.
I don't know if we're ready.
Now's the time, Senator.
Thank you.
We're ready to move the bill.
Senator Clausen, I have an amendment that really speaks to some of the issues that Senator Orman was talking about and Senator Miller, I think, was talking about, which is that we really need to know who's graduating these children. I need to know really who are the schools? I would like to have a record of the schools that graduate the kids that go into these programs. So if with your support, I would like to add some language. I just drafted it. Our staff, thank you so much for so diligently going and writing this. And we had copies that are handwritten just in case we cannot meet the deadline. But thank you so much to the staff for helping me put this together so quickly so that it reads correctly and is placed where it's supposed to place. So basically, the A4 amendment is supposed to include some language that will require the name and location of the secondary school, including the charter school from which the student graduated. So it will simply allow us to know where the children are coming from, and that's basically what the amendment does.
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, and to Senator Torres-Wright, I completely agree with you. My children are... Two of the four, the middle two are 22 and 19, both working their way through college. It is hard enough to work and earn the money to pay for the credits, let alone to have to work hard enough to pay for non-credits. It's a disgrace, and there is a failure in the system here somewhere. But I want to ask you to consider an oral amendment, Senator Torres-Wright, to put the date of graduation, because I think it will then help us identify what Senator Claussen talked about those students that maybe haven't been in the school system for 10 years.
Right.
They maybe have been unfamiliar with their skills, but if you put the date in there, I think this will give us even better information.
I think that's excellent. Thank you, Senator. I think that's very important.
And Senator Claussen, I'm sorry, we didn't give you a chance first to address the amendment.
Senator Torres-Wright and Madam Chair, we can already get this information. I, as a principal, got the list. Tells me where the student was, what the name of the student, and I can track that information. So that information is available. And maybe we need to do a little bit more research so it becomes more public, but I know that we have that information available now. I, as a high school principal 8, 9, 10 years ago, had this information. So I knew the students leaving Rosemont High School that were receiving remedial coursework, what institution they were at, and when they graduated. And as I mentioned before, first time I got that list, I was very concerned. So I went back and pulled the transcripts of all those students so I could see, okay, who are we talking about here? What are we missing? Are these students, you know, why are we not being successful with them? So I know we can get that information, and so maybe we can do a little bit more work on how to make that more public.
But, Senator Claussen, I think what Senator Torres-Wray's amendment does is that the report that goes to the ranking chairs of higher education, as we look at our who's in remediation, we need to know.
True.
And so this really allows the legislature to be able to address what's happening.
True. I understand. So we have the information. We need to just need to get it to the legislature.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what her bill does. And but I think we need some help from council to insert in the proper place. Senator Ortman is moving to amend the A4 with her oral amendment. Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, on page 1.6 after 7, just insert the date of graduation and now, see the date of graduation and the name and location of the secondary school, including the charter school from which the student graduated. So I think that does it.
Madam Chair, I would offer that amendment and hope to earn Senator Torres-Wray's support and that of Senator Claussen as well.
Senator Torres-Wray?
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. Senator Claussen?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, Mr. Fuller, I didn't hear, but I imagine you're going to put it under the reporting in Subdivision 5. That's where you'd put this amendment?
Madam Chair?
Mr. Fuller.
On the A4 amendment, that's correct. On the A4 amendment on line 1.6, after that new 7, so the 1 through 6, now we've added the 7, we just add after the 7.
Very good. Thank you.
The date of graduation in.
Thank you.
Very good. So Senator Torres-Wray moves the A4 as in within the incorporation of the Ortman amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. So, Senator Claussen, would you like to move your bill as amended?
You know, Madam Chair, this has been a great conversation, and I really appreciate the involvement of the committee and the questions, and we had great testifiers. So, yes, I very definitely will move. So move.
Okay, so Senator Claussen moves the 352 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to finance. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Thank you very much, Senator Claussen. I share the committee's intentions that we take action. Great. So your next bill?
Once again, good afternoon, Madam Chair. thank you for the opportunity to hear Senate File 871. And the purpose of this bill is to provide an exemption from college placement exams if the student achieves an ACT college readiness score in the academic area requiring placement testing. The ACT, as many of you know, is a curriculum and standards-based assessment that measures the student's academic readiness for college in four academic areas: English, reading, math, science, and there's also an optional writing exam that students may take. Colleges use the ACT scores for student admissions, advising, and course placement. Just a little bit of a primer on ACT. We have over 1.8 million students tested annually in the United States using the ACT exam. And in the past, 76% of Minnesota graduates were tested in Minnesota. That's over 45,000 students. And beginning with the current school year, as many of you know, the ACT is required of all Minnesota public high school graduates. You do have a handout in front of you. It has kind of a salmon color that I thought would be useful in explaining what is a college readiness score. In looking back at 2014, and I'm just using math as an example, there's a similar charts for science and reading and English, but I'm just giving you the math one to get a taste for how this works. But 61% of the Minnesota students achieved a college readiness score in mathematics in 2014, and that's compared to 43% nationwide. And many of you are aware, for 9 years in a row, Minnesota has attained the highest ACT scores in the nation of states that require over 70% of the students taking it. I think it's interesting to note also that we had over 9,500 Minnesota students that were within 4 points of obtaining or achieving that college readiness score. And that's 54% of those people that fell below the college readiness. So we had many students that were within 4 points of getting that readiness score. So let's look at what I've given you here. If you look at above in that center box, topics in the flow to number and quantity, this would be a standard. And then below that in the salmon area, those would be objectives. So there's questions in each one of those areas. And the score range is on the left. So if you scored a 13 to 15, you were proficient in those areas. And as you go down the page, if you're 16 to 19, you were proficient in those areas. And 20 to 23 and so on. And then over on the far right, the college readiness benchmark for mathematics is 22. So if you score a 22 or higher, you are deemed to be college ready in your skills for mathematics, which means that, and they've done studies on this, that a student with a college readiness score would have a 50% likelihood of achieving a B or higher in a first-year college algebra course at a typical college or university. So you can look through there and you can see the standards, you can see the objectives, and what it takes, you know, to get that college readiness score. And so what I am saying is that we still have students taking the AccuPlacer exam, which is a computer-based test that assesses reading, writing, and math skills and is used in Minnesota for college placement. The fees to take the AccuPlacer is anywhere from $20 to $75, and the AccuPlacer exam is approximately 1 hour, 45 minutes long, but is not really a time limit on it. By providing a waiver for students who have demonstrated college readiness, time and money will be saved. I'll give you a great example One of my daughters admitted to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. On a Saturday, we had to drive down to Rochester to take the acuplacer exam. I drove her down. She took the exam. We had to pay for the exam. We wasted basically a whole day in doing that. But she also had a college readiness score, so why do you have to go through that? So if you've already taken a test and it's been proven you're college ready in an academic area, why go through the process of a placement exam? So that's what this bill does. It eliminates the necessity for students to take that placement exam if they're proven on the ACT they're college ready, and we know now that all students in Minnesota will be taking the ACT.
Thank you very much, Senator Claussen. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Claussen, I don't know if you remember this. I'm a little fuzzy on some of the details, but when we did revise the testing for the ACT, I thought part of the agreement there was that we would get rid of the acuplacer. Yeah. Do you have any clarification on whatever happened here?
Yeah. Senator Claussen, Senator Kent, I thought so, too.
Thank you.
And I thought so, too, until I started asking questions of Minskew folks, and apparently that message was not communicated. So I felt we had to put it in statute.
Thank you, Senator Claussen. And I do recall many conversations when we were talking about the rationale for doing this. We talked about that we could then eliminate the acuplacer. So thank you. So you have testifiers? Oh, was it Kath, Senator Sharon?
No.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm ready to vote.
I think his testifiers want to speak, but I'm ready to vote, too. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to get on the way. But, you know, this and the previous testimony speaks to some measures that we have in place in our institutions that truly do not make any sense, yet they keep happening and they cost money. And we have to be very diligent about, you know, reviewing that and figuring out, you know, why is that we don't move in this direction, since it makes sense. Legislatively, we review this. The same thing, you know, for the previous bill. It does make sense that we move in this direction, that we simplify, that we understand. But yet, we have opposition because there is an infrastructure that exists behind these things that we just simply sometimes cannot get rid of. And I think we really have to be very attentive to the fact that the advocates of those infrastructures keep coming to us to tell us that it makes so much sense that we keep them in place. And so we have to thank you, Senator Claussen, for bringing, you know, just simply a handout that says this doesn't make any sense. In 5 minutes, you just kind of took us through it in a very intelligent way. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Do you want to call your testifiers?
Yes, Madam Chair. I thought we were done.
Yeah. I don't need it.
Yes,
it's up to you.
Yes, I think we should. They've been here and they're ready. So Mr. Ramon Page and Ms. Latasha Gandhi are here.
Madam Chair Bonoff and Committee
Ms. Gandhi.
Thank you again for having us. As Senator Claussen mentioned, we're here to express our support for the regulation when students are placed into remedial courses. As a former student in the Minskew system, I too had to take the acuplacer test, and there were certain areas that I felt that I did not need to be placed into remedial courses. So having an option that would allow me to opt out would have been extremely beneficial, not to only my finances, but my mental state when I realized I had to take those. I'll just leave it at that state when I had to take those courses. I also encourage Minskew to encourage their students when retaking the exam, because there is an option to retake the test, that they actually are given the materials and resources they need to prepare for the test. I often remember taking the test and being told I could retake it, but not understanding where do I go back to get the knowledge to retake it. So that's just another one of our encouragements, but we thoroughly support the bill that Claussen is presenting, and we also have Ramon Page, who is a chapter leader of University of Minnesota, who wants to say something.
Very good. Mr. Page, thanks for being with us today.
Hello, Madam Chair Bonoff and committee members. My name is Ramon Page, and I'm currently in my second academic year at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I studied my first year in Minskew at Minnesota State University in Mankato, where I took a placement test prior to remediation. unaware of resources that would allow me not only to improve but retake the assessment if necessary. I believe that students shouldn't have to take a placement test if data proves that they're college ready. This is why I'm here today advocating for the bill regulating the assignment of students to remedial courses. Students should be fully knowledgeable and aware of support systems to prepare for assessment taking and allow the opportunity to do so. And with that said, I would like you all to continue supporting MNSCU and being more intentional about providing students with such resources and study materials for assessment taking. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Page, what is your major?
Political science.
Very good. Thank you. And had you taken the ACT?
Yes, in high school.
And Mr. Page, would you have had to take those remediation classes if they had used your ACT scores in place of that? Would you have still had to take those remediation classes? Do you know?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Good. Well, congratulations on doing what you needed to do and transferring to UMN Twin Cities.
Yep, thank you.
Very good. So, Senator Klassen, seems like you got a motion.
So move.
Senator Klassen moves Senate File 871. Well, I guess this will just be laid over for possible inclusion. So, thanks. Unless we send it to the floor. So,
you can send it to the floor.
Yes. Should we do that?
Yeah.
Can you dual track?
Yeah. Senator Klassen, I think we'll send it to the floor.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, let's send it to the floor. And we can, you know, we can always, we'll have it here if we want to put it in our omnibus bill as well. So, Senator Klassen renews his motion to send Senate File 871 be recommended to pass and referred to the floor. All those in, is that okay, Senator Klassen?
That would be fine, Madam.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Do we need a division? No, I'm just kidding.
Are we done? Are we going to adjourn?
Yeah. Meeting is adjourned.